Yeah, g'day, mate. You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned in to the R1 News, your stop for news and current affairs on the airwaves. 11 to 12 weekdays here on Radio 1 91 FM. Te reo irirangi kotahi.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei āta. This is R1 News here on Radio 1, Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi, for Rahina Takaumātahi or Takurua, Monday the 11th of July. Ko Quinton Tiene, and I'm here until 12 to bring you the latest news from Otipoti and across Aotearoa. Coming up on the show, I tēnei rā, we have Dave with this morning's breaking news headlines and weather. Following this, I'll be speaking with Otipoti Mayor Aaron Hawkins about combating air pollution in Dunedin. Following that, we have an interview with Louis Bernhardt, a former mathematics student at the University of Otago, who alongside other maths alumni has co-signed a letter to the Vice-Chancellor calling for greater support for the Department of Mathematics. Finally, I spoke to Green MP Chloe Swarbrick this morning about a liquor store in Auckland that has faced backlash after accepting afterpay for alcohol purchases. And then finally, I'll be welcoming critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer back into the studio to talk about this week's issue. First up though, here is Saltwater Criminals with GSH on Radio 1 91 FM. You are listening to R1 News here on Radio 1 91 FM. Coming up right now, we have Radio 1's Dave Borry with the headlines and weather.
The R1 News headlines.
Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says moving to alert level red would not make a significant change to growing COVID-19 cases. Speaking on RNZ's morning report, Ardern said wearing a mask and being fully vaccinated, including with a second booster shot for those eligible, are the most effective protection measures against COVID-19. She said that the shifting to the red alert level, which primarily restricts gathering numbers, would be largely ineffective because half of the population has already had COVID at least once, and because older people are now bearing the brunt of the illness. They are more likely to require hospitalisation as a result of a COVID-19 infection. On Sunday, hospitalisations with COVID rose to their highest since April 5th. Epidemiologists have long been warning of a second wave of infections. Former White House strategist and ally of Donald Trump, Steve Bannon, says he is willing to testify in the investigation of the January 6th, 2021 Capitol riot. Bannon had previously defied a government subpoena to testify in the inquiry. However, on Saturday, a letter from his attorney indicated he was prepared to testify. Last year, he faced two criminal counts of contempt of Congress for refusing to testify. He is expected to go on trial for these later this month. The Capitol riot saw more than 2,000 Trump supporters, including members of the Proud Boys and other neo-Nazi extremist groups, forcibly invade the Capitol building, vandalizing the building and threatening violence against lawmakers, injuring 138 responding police officers. The rioters refused to accept that Trump had lost the 2020 election. The inquiry is investigating Trump's lack of action to prevent the invasion. Thousands of Sri Lankan protesters are occupying the presidential palace in the capital, Colombo, and are refusing to leave until the president and prime minister resign. Sri Lanka is facing a historically unprecedented economic crisis, and the public accuses the government of failing to prevent it. Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe says he will leave office as soon as the new government is in place, while President Gotabaya Rajapaksa is expected to step down on Wednesday. Sri Lanka's economic crisis was triggered by the government suspending the repayment of foreign loans due to a currency shortage. Currently, Sri Lanka is holding the talks with International Monetary Fund to seek bailout and relying on aid from other nations. And those were the headlines on R1 News. Now, kē te pēhea te āhua o Tārangi. How's the weather?
The R1 News weather.
E tēnei rā, Ōtepōti can expect a high of Waru, 8, and a low of Onu, 6, with clear skies turning cloudy in the evening and northeasterlies. Apōpō, rain is expected to develop throughout the day, with easterly strengthening and snow to 500 metres. A high of Iwa, 9, and a low of Fitu, 7. A road snowfall warning is in place for the State Highway 1, Dunedin to Waitati, from 8 p.m. Tuesday to 8 a.m. Wednesday, and a heavy rain watch is in place for North Otago and Dunedin from 12 p.m. Tuesday to 8 a.m. Wednesday. Expected to fall as snow above 500 metres.
That was the R1 News headlines. Catch up at r1.co.nz/news or find us at Radio 1 91 FM on Twitter or R1 News NZ on Instagram and tune in to R1 News at 11 a.m. on weekdays.
That was Dave with the headlines and weather. Coming up next on the show, I will be speaking to Ōtepōti Mayor Aaron Hawkins about combating air pollution following a report that showed Dunedin had some of the highest levels of air pollution in the country. But right now, here is Chelsea Jade with Best Behaviour on R1 News. You are listening to R1 News here on Radio 1 91 FM. That was Chelsea Jade with Best Behaviour. A recent report has found that cities in Aotearoa's south have some of the worst air pollution in the country, creating a lifestyle danger for their inhabitants. Southland's Invercargill was found to have the highest death rate resulting from vehicle exhausts. Resulting from vehicle exhausts and domestic fires, coming in above major cities such as Tāmaki Makaurau, Auckland, and Ototahi, Christchurch. Wetiputi, Dunedin came in under scrutiny in the report, with the second highest number of deaths attributable to vehicle exhausts in the country. Annually, 3,300 people die from air pollution-related causes across the country, with two-thirds of these attributable to vehicle exhausts. I'm joined on the phone now by Mayor of Dunedin, Aaron Hawkins, to talk about reducing vehicle emissions in Wetiputi. Morena, Aaron, it's great to have you on.
Kia ora, good morning.
So, Mr. Mayor, what is your response to the findings that show Dunedin has some of the worst air pollution in the country?
It's certainly disappointing and focuses the mind on what we need to do better in order to look after the health and well-being of citizens here in Wetiputi, Dunedin, and while air quality is beyond our remit as a city council, we certainly need to be mindful of the impact our decisions have on air quality, particularly with regard to how we design and invest in our transport network.
So what are some steps then that the council is taking to reduce dependency on cars?
We've got a significant body of work over the next 10 years that looks at making alternative modes of transport safer and more accessible and more affordable for people to get into the city and get around the city. Things like the Urban Cycleways Program, and we're seeing the design of the Albany Street connection going on at the moment. The work around implementing central city bike hubs in the city, accelerating the work on the tunnels trail that would connect the city to the Tairi, the peninsula connection that stretches out to Portobello or will shortly. We're looking at how we can prioritise bus trips through the city, particularly at busy times, to make it a more efficient option for people. Park and ride options at Burnside and Molesquiel, a collective package of things that will make it easier for people to take fewer trips by car. It's not about trying to get everyone to change their habits for every trip that they make, but certainly about making the alternatives more appealing and more efficient and more accessible for people more often than they currently are. So, you know, that has been largely driven, terrible pun, apologies, by our focus on the zero carbon transition, and it's certainly built around a climate action focus, but one of the benefits of that, the flow-on benefits of that, would be improved air quality outcomes.
And so, with local body elections coming up, what are some priorities you think for the council in the next term? What are some steps you'd like to see them take to reduce dependency on cars?
Well, we've made decisions through this term of council, and in particular through our 10-year plan, that is investing in a 21st century transport network for the first time. I think you could make a case that we could do more and we could do that faster, but certainly if we are to build on the momentum that we have made in the past few years, it's important that the incoming council committed to the same goals and to implementing the decisions that council has made around our transport network.
And so, moving beyond Dunedin, what are some steps you'd like to see at a national level to help with air pollution in Wetiputi and beyond?
One of the challenges we have in transport is that our transport investments are roughly funded about half and half between us as a local authority and Waka Kotahi as the Crown agency. And so, in order to get support for our transport projects, they need the approval not just of council as a body, but also of Waka Kotahi as an investor. And one of the things that they explicitly don't consider when they're weighing up the various merits of proposals is what we call the wider economic benefits, and so those are things like physical health and well-being outcomes. So, and what's worse, they're often calculated and then actively discounted. So I think we need a transport funder in Waikotahi to take a far more broad view of the benefits of mode shift in particular, and how we deal with our how we deal with transport planning.
And finally, as the body responsible for air quality, what are some steps you believe the regional council needs to take to reduce air pollution in Otipoti and Otago?
Well, at the moment, anything would be better than what's currently happening. So the regional council made a decision to review its air quality plan, but rather than continue doing the work that it was doing in the meantime, it's suspended all work over a four-year period to improve air quality outcomes in the region, and we submitted very strongly against that. They're now only doing monitoring. There's no funded work by the regional council to improve air quality outcomes, and reports like the one which we've seen last week only highlight further the detrimental implications of that decision. So certainly we would urge them to accelerate the planning and implementation of whatever comes next, because literally sitting here idling is having a really reasonably serious impact on the health and well-being of citizens, not just in Dunedin, but across the wider Otago region.
And sorry to keep you for much longer, but just building upon that, do you know what the Regional Council's reasons were for putting that on hold for 4 years?
Largely a wider political debate about how much money they were prepared to raise through rates revenue. There's been a significant increase in the amount of activity going on at the Regional Council, and that is to be applauded, but one of the casualties of some of that work seemed to be this being deprioritised in the interim. That's as far as we've been able to ascertain as to why they've chosen to suspend their work programme.
Excellent. Thank you very much for coming on, Aaron. It's been a pleasure.
Kia ora.
That was Utiputi Mayor Aaron Hawkins talking about reducing vehicle emissions here in Dunedin. Coming up on the show, I have an interview with Louis Bernhardt, who is a former University of Otago mathematics student, who, alongside 13 other mathematics and broader alumni, sent a letter to the Vice-Chancellor calling for better support for the Department of Mathematics. Right now, though, here is Recitals with Rock Dove on R1 News. You are listening to R1 News here on Radio 1 91 FM. That was Recitals with Rock Dove. A group of mathematics alumni from the University of Otago have penned an open letter to the Vice-Chancellor, calling for greater support for the Department of Mathematics, which they believe is underfunded and overworked. The letter calls for the University of Otago to recognise the importance of mathematics to sciences and highlights the diminishing student numbers at both undergraduate and postgraduate level, many of whom, referring to the postgraduate students, choose to go overseas rather than pursue further study at the University of Otago. Signatories of the letter have three asks of the university, including requiring a suitable level of mathematics for a wider range of degrees, particularly those in the Bachelor of Science, standardising mathematics education across the university by having the Department of Mathematics and Statistics teach all mathematics courses, and increasing the staff loads in the Department of Mathematics, including hiring staff to teach core first-year mathematics. Pro Vice-Chancellor of Sciences, Professor Richard Barker, responded to the open letter by the 14 signatories and said he was appreciative of the time the students had taken to write to him and express their concerns. Barker highlighted the university's difficult financial position in the wake of COVID-19 and the rising costs over the past decade as the reasons for the university's inability to invest further in the mathematics department. Barker also suggests that diminishing student numbers are not a result of underfunding of the department, but rather student choice when it comes to subjects, acknowledging the fallen numbers of both undergraduate and postgraduate students. I spoke to Louis Bernhardt, a master's student at the University of Melbourne, and an Otago Mathematics alum, about the letter.
Perfect. So can you tell me a bit about the letter?
The letter is primarily addressed to the University of Otago's administration, sort of just talking about how they have not sufficiently supported the maths department at the university. And by doing this, they have, we believe, negatively affected students' education. And for two groups of students, first of all, students who are enrolled directly in a maths degree. I am one of those people. And also students in wider degrees who require like a significant numeracy component to their degrees. And so we have people signed on from both of those groups. So we have maths majors as well as physics majors, chemistry, computer science, and I think that is all of them. So to deal with the first group, you can just, and data-wise, you can see some big trends, mainly that enrollments have just generally gone down. So this is especially true for postgraduate courses. In the last 12 years alone, PhD students, there have been 9 total in the maths program. And while that was about 4 enrolling per year in 2012, that was 4, that has gone down to 1 per year just this year and last year. And then also in the Bachelor of Science majoring in maths honours degree, it went down from 15 students in 2012 to just 2 students in 2022, this year. So you can clearly see that there is less interest in studying maths, and so we believe that's indicative of a wider problem of less funding being provided to mathematics, the mathematics department, and maths as a subject. For the second group of people, we believe that there has not been enough of a push to require maths as any component to a large range of degrees, particularly in the Bachelor of Science. So the university has deemed that maths is not a required component of chemistry, geology, geography, computer science, other degrees as well as those. We thought those were some of the most, you know, egregious examples that you can see from other universities. They do in fact require maths subjects for as components for those degrees. Whereas they're just not required at the university. They say that they are, you know, recommended or strongly recommended, but we think that they need to be required for the relevant, for the, you know, a sufficient quality of numeracy education to be achieved. And the university tends to justify this by observing that there tends to be a lack of enrollments or a drop in enrollments when maths is required as a degree. And so conversely, when they remove those requirements, they see increases in enrollments because students are naturally scared of maths. But we believe that this isn't a certification. If students don't want to do it, it does not remove the fact that the maths is still there and is still important in terms of learning those subjects and in terms of being sufficiently prepared for research and industry and further study in these science subjects. So yeah, there's generally what our complaints were in the letter.
And so what was your personal motivation to get involved in this letter sign the letter?
Yeah. It was my friend Elliot Marshall who first had the idea of writing the letter. I think he was particularly upset at the way that his degree ended up setting him up insufficiently for postgraduate research. So we are both now studying it. He is at Monash University and I am at the University of Melbourne, and we've been kind of first of all impressed at the level of maths education that these universities are providing, but then simultaneously thinking back to our own educations at Otago and how they don't really match up, and so we kind of wanted to look into why that was and what steps could be taken to improve that quality of education. Yeah, so that was my interest in it in particular.
And so what steps would the university need to take to bring the maths education up to the level of Melbourne and Monash?
Not just Melbourne and Monash, but also universities within New Zealand as well, University of Auckland. So our recommendations, there are three of them. The first one is that you require a suitable level of mathematics skills for a wider range of degrees, particularly for a Bachelor of Science. So what that would mean is just requiring one or maybe two for some degrees, just basic maths papers in these degrees. That would bring these degrees more in line with degrees being offered in other universities. The second recommendation is that they standardize mathematics education across the university by having the maths department teach all mathematics papers and create papers that are designed for the students taking them instead of just catch-all papers like maths for biology or maths for commerce. This would obviously benefit students who aren't directly taking maths, but would benefit from a better maths education. And then our third recommendation, which would affect everybody taking maths, whether as a major or as a part of another degree, would be to increase the number of staff in the mathematics department and hire teaching lecturers who are focused primarily on teaching core mathematical skills in first year papers. Now, that third one is a really big one because you look at other subjects in the Bachelor of Science and they have at least one teaching staff most of the time. A lot of them are, winning national awards for their teaching skills and winning Teacher of the Year awards, Lecturer of the Year awards. But also in other universities, specifically University of Auckland, University of Waikato, there are teaching staff, teaching fellows who have a greater emphasis on teaching and tutoring and demonstrating from within their departments. And we believe that that would have a big positive effect on that sort of early first year maths education.
Excellent. And so are you concerned about the future of the Otago Maths Department? And if so, why?
Well, it depends on if you're an optimist or a pessimist, I guess. I mean, we submitted this letter in the hopes that it would have some effect. We're not sure how much, but you can also ask, well, if the administration isn't really doing that much on their level, then what is the department itself doing? And the answer is actually quite a bit. So for one thing, they have completely revamped first year mathematics papers. So they've gotten rid of the last three that they were offering and have introduced new ones. And one of them in particular is called Mathematics for Scientists, which aims to prepare students from a range of scientific disciplines, which is a great step, but it remains to be seen whether this paper will be required by other subjects, other courses like chemistry, again, or computer science or geology or other science subjects. So we will see whether that happens. Another big thing that is going on is that there are several members of the department who are members of the New Zealand Mathematics Society. And this society is involved in a big review of NCEA maths in high school because, and this is a huge topic all on its own, which would take far too long to get into, but it is not just university level maths that is a big problem in New Zealand. It's also primary and high school level maths as well, which is possibly in more dire need of, you know, fixing and restructuring. And so there are members of the Otago Maths Department who are actually helping with this. For example, Professor David Bryant, he is the president of the New Zealand Mathematics Society. Dr. Matt Perry of the Statistics Department is vice president. And so there is this direct input from the department into high school and, yeah, NCEA mathematics, which will then have a knock-on effect into, of course, university maths. So, yeah, things are being done. It would be good if there were things done at the level above independent departments, but I guess we'll have to see.
That was University of Otago Mathematics alumni Louis Bernhardt, who is now studying a Master's in Mathematics at the University of Melbourne, talking about the open letter that he and 13 others penned to the university calling for greater support for the Department of Mathematics. Coming up on the show, I have an interview with Green MP Chloe Swarbrick about an Auckland liquor store which was accepting afterpay for alcohol purchases, and then we have critic Te Arohi editor Fox Mayer back in the studio to talk about this week's issue. But right now, here is Mousy with $1 Wednesdays on The One.
Now we'll
You are listening to R1 News here on Radio 1. An Auckland liquor store has come under fire for accepting afterpay for alcohol purchases, an offering which critics claim will only increase alcohol harm in our communities. In a now-deleted Facebook post, the Panmure bottler claimed that the wait was over before announcing the controversial payment method would be accepted for purchases at the store. After the public backlash, the store has said that they are reviewing their policies and will not be accepting afterpay until further notice. The Bottle-O were approached for comment, but did not get back to R1 News in time. This controversy comes as Green MP Chloe Swarbrick's Alcohol Harm Reduction Members Bill makes its way through Parliament. I spoke to her this morning about the incident and her Members Bill.
So what is your response to the Panmure Bottle-O offering afterpay for alcohol purchases?
It was pretty astounding. I think that you can also see that in the community response, not only here in Bunga Makaurau, but also broader Aotearoa New Zealand. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it was kind of straight to the heart of the broader drug problems that we're experiencing in this country and a lack of sensible regulation, which you get at both ends of town, right? If you think of spectrum of drug regulation available. On one side, you've got complete criminal prohibition, and then at the other extreme, you have a deregulated or an unregulated legal free market. And while, of course, alcohol isn't totally unregulated, no one's arguing that, it is, I would argue, and I think many, particularly in the public health space, would argue, far too un- or under-regulated. So when you have both of those instances and both of those extremes at both ends of that spectrum, you have the exploitation of particularly vulnerable communities in order to make a quick buck. And that, I think, is very clearly what both the community and myself thought. So it's good to see, especially with the intervention of Councillor Justine Bartley, that this has there's been a U-turn from this bottle of, but again, I think the broader issue still remains, and while it is a really deeply unfortunate circumstance, it hopefully shines a light on the potential harm that obviously alcohol is the most harmful drug in this country can cause.
And so is this something that could come up under your Alcohol Harm Minimisation Amendment Bill, or perhaps a future bill you'd look at?
Yeah, so it doesn't come or would it be covered within the current drafting of the Alcohol Harm Minimisation Amendment Bill, simply because a Members Bill can only do so much, and completely freely and frankly, in the drafting of that legislation, in order to break the ice and not just fall down a range of daft political hurdles, because we can't talk about things like taxation sensibly or maturely in this country, and it also doesn't include anything around age or any of those other controversies. There's two key things that the bill would do. The first is enable local communities to put in place their local alcohol policies without being dragged through the courts, as, for example, Auckland Council has been for the past 7 years and spent over $1 million trying to put in place these regulations and restrictions on particularly the proliferation of bottle shops. And the second thing is around alcohol advertising sponsorship and sport, something recommended by a group instigated under John Key's government, the national government in 2014, and chaired by Sir Graham Lowe, someone who I don't think anybody can say doesn't know anything about sports. So it wouldn't come within the remit of this bill, but given that this conversation is currently occurring, I hope that it will be captured within the government's own review of the Sale and Supply of Alcohol Act. But once again, I think we all have to be aware of the fact that there is quite a tendency inside of politics over the past 10 years to pass really controversial and difficult, crunchy issues to review groups and inquiry groups and to commission those reports, but then not to act on the recommendations of those reports. So it's going to take a lot more fighting, and I'm hoping that with the Members Bill we get to break the ice.
In your view, how does the use of afterpay compare to credit cards for purchasing alcohol?
Yeah, that's a really important point. I think one of the many things that we have to investigate here is obviously the fact that we have an increasing kind of popularity and normalisation and almost glamorisation of credit lines because afterpay is effectively a credit card, all branded in a slightly different way and obviously with a range of different terms and conditions attached to it. I don't think that there is the same kind of cultural thinking about the likes of afterpay services in the same way that people might think about going through a more arduous process to sign up for a credit card. So there actually is presently, I understand, the Ministry for Business Innovation and Employment, a MBIE, as most people know, are currently evaluating what it would look like to have better regulations around Afterpay since it arrived in Aotearoa in 2017. So awaiting the more considered outcomes of that report, which hopefully we'll have some substantive debate on in Finance and Expenditure Committee. But I say to everybody who is interested in this or has, you know, shared something on social media about it, whilst that engagement is awesome and being aware of the issue is really important, please don't leave it at that. Please follow what occurs with recommendations of this report, because otherwise we'll have yet another thing that occurs and everybody's up in arms about it on social media. But we could have seen it coming had we engaged with the political process at the right time.
And what do you think the biggest driver is behind Aotearoa's questionable relationship with alcohol?
Yeah, now that's the big question. So obviously alcohol didn't exist here pre-colonial times, and that's actually been one of the many arguments that has been raised with me throughout my kind of journey in the alcohol harm reduction space, but particularly by Māori health authorities and by Māori public health advocates, is that this is actually probably fundamentally a Te Tiriti o Waitangi breach in terms of the lack of protection that the Crown has afforded to Māori in this country when it comes to the regulation of alcohol. I think if you look kind of broad brushstroke at the spectrum of politics and you try and whittle it down to what are the core variables or factors that influence, you know, the world that all of us live in and the social contract and all of that stuff, on one side you kind of have the structure, which is our laws and our regulations and our taxes and our levies and all of that stuff that you often kind of think about. But that's the blueprint, and that's only given validity or legitimacy by our culture. And that culture obviously is something that was picked up on quite substantially, and particularly Paddy Gower's doco, but also by Guy and Esther and RNZ addressing the similar topic of a personal journey and that opening the door to what are our systemic issues in this country with regard to alcohol harm. And culture, if you, again, really drill into it from a design thinking perspective, it's about a shared set of values. And when you think about how you can change culture or prioritise different values inside of our culture, then we start to set the tone for an environment that's conducive to structural change. But both of those things totally feed off of each other, right? So it's kind of a chicken or an egg scenario. So I'd say that we need to get far better regulatory settings in place in order to set in place an environment that it's not becoming increasingly normalised, that we have the same level of ambulance call out on crate day as we do on New Year's Eve. And that, again, comes about by virtue of us having these conversations in a more and more sensible way. And I think part of that puzzle is actually talking about alcohol as the drug that it is.
That was Green MP Chloe Swarbrick talking about an Auckland liquor store which has come under fire for accepting afterpay on alcohol purchases. I'm joined in the studio now by Fox and Molly from Critic Te Arohi to talk about this week's issue. Kia ora.
Morena.
Kia ora.
So it's nice to have Critic back in print. Feels like forever since I last read it. The first story, your one about the guard who dispensed sauce fines. I saw this come up online during the break. Good scoop. Can you give us the lowdown, and has anything come up on this story since you wrote it?
Sure. It's something we've been following for a while. I'm not sure what's happened in the last few weeks with it. I haven't heard anything, but apparently the conclusion of this, after what started with a $300 fine for stealing a packet of sauce, ended up with us scrolling through the child abuse registry online to find somebody who probably shouldn't be able to have a security license according to Aotearoa security requirements. So that was spicy.
Yeah, bigger story than it than you thought it was going to be.
Oh, much bigger. The sauce just kept spilling, man.
And so the bar bracket, that was a big takeaway from this week's one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, always contentious.
Yeah, were you surprised? Kind of.
I was very pleasantly surprised to see a rematch of last year's finals.
Yeah.
So the exact same two contenders, DSC and Woof, went head-to-head again, and Woof stomped them this year by about 200 votes. It was much tighter last year.
Yeah, that's not small.
Uh-uh.
Well-deserved.
Yep.
So
good job.
Would Woof have been your personal picks for top bar?
we're definitely both in agreeance that the crack takes the cake for us.
Unfortunately, the crack also had the biggest loss of any bar on the bar bracket by 400 votes.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
We're happy for it to remain an undiscovered.
Yeah, you can always get a seat.
Yep. Always a seat. Yep. Always good vibes.
Yeah. So, don't go to the crack.
Let us go to the crack. Yeah.
I'll admit I struggled with Pequeno and Woof paired together right at the start.
That was on purpose.
That was rough.
Yeah.
And so the Minion movie, your editorial, did you enjoy it? You go purely for the meme?
God, yeah, I guess. It ended up, it was certainly an experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I was actually quite surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah, great soundtrack.
Let me just say, the soundtrack was great. Fly Like an Eagle.
It was awesome. Crazy Town, good vibes.
Great voice actors.
The animation quality was astonishingly good, which is kind of funny to see in the Minion movie. But yeah,
not where I would expect that comment to be directed to.
But yeah, overall, you know, it was a good experience. It was the most I've ever drank in a movie theater, so that was fun.
As what else do you do at the Minion movie?
God, I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then the other big story, I thought, was the one with a university lecturer at the Freedom and Rights Coalition protest. Mm. Can you give us the lowdown on that?
Yeah, so, I mean, a variety of people speak at these events. They're typically linked to some pretty extreme groups, including one that owes $500,000 fine for not paying their protest fees. But it did end up giving us the spiciest response I've ever seen from the university, which they said, you know, we respect and we protect our staff's rights to free speech within their areas of expertise. And then they noted that this professor's area of expertise was computer science, not vaccine mandates. So I thought that said a lot without saying a lot.
Yeah, keeping it all quiet. And I must just comment, I do love the clickbait style issue.
Thank you. This is always a very design-intensive issue, but just waiting to see if I get scooped up by Women's Day, if you're listening.
Just slowly sending it through to their recruiting department.
It is so fun to write those ridiculous little pull quotes, like, all over the pages.
All the ridiculous little, like, you know, journalism or investigation.
I love the randomly capitalized bits in the headlines and just all the exclamation marks.
Oh, it's the only time of the year that we get to do it, so we like to go nuts.
We go full rag.
Yeah.
Why not?
You got to do it once, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure, as always.
As always.
This has been R1 News here on Radio 1 91 FM. It's 6 minutes to 12, and so I'll be signing off here. It's been a pleasure as always, and tune in weekdays from 11 to 12 for all the best news here on Radio 1. Right now you have Lady Hawk with Time Flies.
I'm just a freak. Maybe you're lying. I've been trying to fix it lately. Maybe I'm out of luck. Maybe it's time that I just didn't care. I hear it in my head now. I'm trying to disregard what he's saying. I'm feeling kind of weak now. Wanna go to sleep now. Bites in little Saigon. There's a young man who's walking fast. He's tried his whole life to know his dad. Maybe it's time he cut the man some slack. But he doesn't know that old man is feeling lost inside. Doesn't know how to be his own guy. I'd be lying if I said he didn't love him. No, he don't really give a fuck about your money. No, he don't really care. It's in your mind, it's all he wants, but he don't think it's funny. So just strip it back. I'm digging with a shovel.
Seeds, that was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.